Welcome to Once Upon a Film Industry. I am Stephen Lloyd Bennett.
And I'm Al Lopez.
And we are here with the lovely and talented Michelle Weaver. Woo! What up, Michelle?
Hello, what up?
You have seen her on TV shows Love Is and Council of Dads on NBC. Mm-hmm. And she's here to hang out with us for a little bit. Thanks for being on, Michelle. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. It's good to I've known Stephen for a long time, so it's good to catch up, and I've just met Al, so it's nice.
Pleasure.
Michelle was in my first short film when I moved to LA in 2014,
15. Shut up.
It's that long ago. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Emancipation. That was a little black and white thing I shot for $37. And we did that in a day.
Yeah, it was fun.
And we got it on it was on TV for a little bit on that show on BET, American Black Film Festival's TV show. And I always like working with her. So I said, let's talk to her. Cool. So I'll just kick it off with the very first question. How did your family first influence your decision to be an actress?
Wow. Well, I started off dancing when I was three, and I had always performed. We all were required to do something musical. So I was on piano at probably six, something like that. And then my family was like, listen, you should either do choir or do band. And so I was like, okay, I'll do choir. So I would perform with the choir, and I would do this. I would audition for like the exclusive choir groups. And so I performed. I always performed. I performed since I was 3 years old. My older sibling ended up getting a degree in acting and dance before me. So it kind of gave me a little entryway there. I was the academic child, and I wasn't going to major in the arts. I applied to eight schools with a psychology major and a French literature minor. My mother's Haitian, so English was her third language. So I always wanted to pick up another language and travel the world. And when I was in senior, I got a random audition Well, basically my school goes to a theater. It's called the Thespian Conference. And they have the opportunity for seniors to audition for tons of colleges. I had already early submitted to most of the schools I wanted to go to. And there was just an open spot. So I was like, shoot, I have a song. I have a monologue. I just went and auditioned. I ended up getting a theater scholarship to go to Pepperdine. And so my parents were like, Pepperdine, go do it. You know?
Right.
So they thought I was going to do a double major in acting and psychology. I got there, took a psychology class, and I said, nope. And I picked up a double major in media production. And so, but I mean, at that point, I paid for the way it worked in my family is that we all paid for our own school. And then, you know, my parents would kind of help out here and there. And so it's like, what are you going to tell me? I'm paying for it. So
I got to jump in there. You paid for your own school?
Well, yeah, we got scholarships, and my parents would help here and there what they could, but it wasn't like my parents were covering completely. Not to throw shade to my parents, but they did help out in areas. So I just was like, I'm going to go into the industry. And then once I was studying theater and media production, I just was like, this is where I'm going to go. So they kind of had to, they're like, okay. And then once from there, they saw my dedication and all that stuff. They were just supportive. My dad did say my senior year in high school, I did a play, Man Who Came to Dinner. And it was my first lead role in a play in high school. And my dad, I remember my dad saying, you know what, Michelle, you could do this. I believed you up there. And so I think once he saw me in my element, they didn't want to kind of push me too much, just kind of let me figure out where I belonged in a sense. So they were very supportive, and especially now they're super supportive. And even when I wasn't booking that much, like, I don't know. I think they just started to see, I guess it's kind of one of those things when you're a parent, when you start to see like your kids figuring out where they belong, even if they're not necessarily thriving at it yet, you're like, you know what, it's going to work out. And so they were pretty supportive from the beginning, but of course, they wanted me to go in a more academic you know, direction at first, but then once right. they realized that wasn't happening, they kind of just got on board, which is good, which is a real blessing.
What would you say is were some of your biggest inspirations as an actress starting out?
I'll tell this story. When I was first starting out, you know, you meet tons of artists your age, and being living in Hollywood, I lived in Hollywood with two other actors. I slept on the top bunk.
And we were bunking it. Nice.
Yeah, I'm bunking it. I was working out so much because I was trying to be in shape, you know, to be an actor. And so getting out of bed from a bunk bed when you're sore, like I would just fall on the ground and just like, I'm so sore. And they'd be like, are you okay? I'm like, I'm fine. But anyways, I'm glad I don't have that problem anymore. But yeah, I remember people just talking to me, and we would do these, just hang out with tons of artists, and people would be just so discouraged after a year, after 2 years. And I remember specifically this moment of this girl, like, how do you do it? How do you stay positive? How are you hanging in there? Like, I'm so frustrated. Like, my response was always like, Steve Harvey was like, lived in his car for 2 years. There was like this rumor that Halle Berry at one point had to check herself into a homeless shelter. I don't know if that's true, but this is the story that I go with. And like Courtney Cox like passed out on a job because she was literally eating cans of soup and barely surviving, that she passed out because she was malnourished. Like, and I'm like, who do I think I am that I'm just going to walk into Hollywood and just make it? Like, these people right. are incredibly talented. They are so good at what they do, and they had to struggle. So why am I getting so easily discouraged by the struggle? Now, of course, I had my ups and downs, but that was kind of the thing that I would always tell myself and tell other people. It's like, don't be so arrogant that you think that you're just going to get a free pass on doing the work and putting in the time to build your business, to build your brand, to win people over in the rooms. And so that was kind of my encouragement. The truth of the matter is, and there was this one moment when Kirk Franklin did this random YouTube video. I mean, someone just started rolling the camera on him when they were in the studio. I think this came out in 2016 or 2015. You can look it up. But he basically said, you can't skip experiences. You cannot skip experiences. And I remember hearing that word and just being like, it's real. And one story that I love is looking at Zendaya. Zendaya started off working very young. She became a fashion icon very early on in her career because she did the work. Her parents, you know, and her decided that she wanted to work on her style. Like that wanted, she wanted to build her brand. But after she was on Disney, she had been a producer. She had been a star of two shows already. She wasn't really taken seriously as an actor right. because she also didn't have the experience. Like her shows were great. They were more comedy driven. They were more sitcom-y. And she wanted to be a movie star. And if you look at her, listen to her interviews before she got Spider-Man, before she got, what was that one movie? She was in it with Zac Efron. And she's like, I went in an audition for years. This girl is on the cover of magazines and she's auditioning in the waiting room with people who probably have less credits than her to show them, no, I can be a movie star. And it just reminds me, you can't skip experiences. Just because you're famous, you still have to go through the process of showing them that you have the talent to lead a movie. And even this, one more thing I'm going to say about that. This, I forget who it was, but I was being very frustrated in the process, wasn't working, was working 6 days at the restaurant, just like trying to barely make it, in and out of classes. And this person, I don't know, I went to some workshop somewhere and a guy said, are you willing to invest $2 million into your performance? Is that how confident you are in pulling off this role? And it just convicted me. I was like, dang, that's the truth. Someone is investing $2 million into your performance. Are you confident that you're going to lead that film? Now me, I watch films all the time and I critique the heck out of some actors.
Right.
So that literally checked me. You may think that you're talented. You may have a lot of beautiful things to add to a movie, but that does not mean you can lead a film. Mm. How many times have we watched a film where we've seen an amazing actor and it fell flat?
Right.
And you're like, dang, I don't know what it is, but something was missing. this is not an easy job. And reminding myself that, give myself time to grow, to step up to that level, and being, giving them something to believe in. You can't expect people to believe in you.
Right.
You need to believe in yourself first. Right. And that's the first step. So I those remember, were a few of the things that encouraged me.
Wow.
I remember when I remember when I was acting, while studying acting, when I first started out, there was this line that my acting coach, Pete Mataliano, said to me one time, and it stuck with me forever. And I took it as a life lesson. He said, "You believe, I believe. If you believe it, I'll believe it." And he's saying that as an actor, you have to believe it and the audience will believe it. But I took that for life, because once you start believing in yourself and start believing in your mission, believing in your goals, believing in your vision, all those things, and then things start to sort of attract to you, and people will start to attract to you, and people start to be like, "Oh, this is the vision. This is the vision."
Yeah. Because when you believe, you act different.
Yeah.
It's not even about what you say. It's about what you do. Mm-hmm. And so if you believe it, you just naturally, you know, carry yourself differently, react to things differently.
And how important was it for you to, I mean, when someone asks you that question, you know, are you willing to invest $2 million in yourself? Like during that time, how important was it for you to be well prepared for that moment when that opportunity was available for you?
Yeah, I do remember being terrified by that statement. Like, I don't know if I know. First of all, I have like $2. So $2 million. And keep in mind, $2 million is an indie film. This is not a blockbuster film. This is not Marvel. This is not even one of those medium budget films. This is an indie film, like the bottom of the bottom, which, I mean, still people make films on $50,000 right now. But in the sense of a SAG low budget, it's $2 million. So it terrified me at first. So I think for me, what it was is that your work's not over and you just need to keep going to class and keep challenging yourself and at the time, a lot of people will like turn down auditions, like, "Oh no, I don't want to do this." Like, I would just audition for things, even things that I didn't want to do, just because I was like, this, you just need to freaking build up your skill. And I took a lot of classes back then, for sure. I was always in a class or working with people, working with friends. And so that's how I responded to that moment, was, okay, well, what can you do in the time being? You can grow. So I invested as much money as I could and as much time as I could into growing, because that was inevitably the only way to get to the point where I would have enough confidence. And eventually I did have enough confidence. I mean, I started to get to the point where, like, no, I can do this. I did an indie film, Illicit. We shot it. I mean, he shot it so quick. He would do it in like two takes. He would change, rewrite scenes while we're in the middle of doing a two take scene. And I think after that, I was like, shoot, I can freaking do this. Okay, let's go. But it's terrifying. Like, you almost have to. And that's the thing. Like, I don't know if you're ever really ready for anything, you know? I mean, they even say that about, you know, marriage, kids, career, your role. I don't know if I was really ready for Love Is, but boy, did I jump off the wall and I put in my all and I grew a lot.
Nice. Right.
And I don't think you can ever be fully, fully ready, except for just ready to grow and learn.
Nice. And you're fantastic in Love Is.
Thank you. It's a great opportunity.
I was so proud. I was like, oh, there goes Michelle doing that thing. Go ahead, girl. Do that thing.
Nice being able to see people that you work with like grow, right? Like, I love seeing even commercials of like, I know that person. Really cool.
And share with us, like, you shared a little bit about it already, but how tough is it to break into the industry?
I believe I'm still breaking in. I've had a lead on a show, I've been on an NBC show. I don't know if you ever, I feel like breaking in the industry is such a term that can cause confusion, to be honest, because, like, for example, I love Jennifer Hudson. She broke into the industry, got an Oscar, and then kind of disappeared for a little while. And she still is expanding her work. She's still expanding her her artistry. And so I don't know what breaking in the industry means. Does it mean that people know who you are? Does it mean you're doing 3 movies a year? Does it mean that you're award winning? Like, what does breaking into the industry really mean? I mean, even if it just means that you can survive off of acting, you can do that off of commercials. Right. And I don't know if that's really breaking into the industry. You could survive off of acting just doing YouTube stuff. So I think the term breaking into the industry is something that is different depending the person and what they, it's to me, it's very similar to the word of success. Like, how do you know once you've reached success? I guess it depends the person.
Right. I was just about to say, I feel like it's it depends on the standard of what the person thinks that is. Like, if someone has a standard of, you know, I want to be the biggest movie star in the world, then breaking in for them is not, you know, a couple commercials. If right. someone's standard is like, hey, I want to be a regular on a TV show, then maybe getting an under 5 on a soap opera is breaking in for them, you know? So it's yeah. just about your standard and how you set forth your mindset and all that.
So basically you define what breaking into the industry is and you define what success is to you as an individual.
Yes, I do believe that.
I have a random question I didn't plan, but have you ever been stopped on the street yet?
After Love Is, I was actually a lot. Nice. Mostly in Atlanta. When I was in Atlanta, I can tell when someone knows who I am because they'll like stare at me and then usually say something to someone else. And then I'll be like,
they start going like this, pointing.
I think one of the funniest moments was when I was getting my nails done, probably 3 months after Love Is premiered. And literally the lady sitting in the chair next to me was like, why do you look like the girl from Love Is? And I was like, because I am her. Like, I mean, sometimes I pretend that I try to not pretend, but I'm not good at, even though I'm an actor, I'm not good at lying like that, you know, like, so I'll usually be like, I don't know, like people will say, I know you from somewhere. Where do I know you? I'm like, I don't know, I'm around, like, blah, blah, blah. Are you an actor? Yeah, but you know, nothing super big. Like, and I just wait for people to discover themselves. Like, I'm not going to sit here and be like, Love Is like this, like, I'm not going to say my resume, like, no,
right.
But I also worked in the restaurant business for many years. And I remember people coming in, like I was supposed to know them and I wouldn't. And then I would make them wait. And someone would come to me to like, you're making that actor wait. Like they were on this and this and this. And I was like, oh, that's why they came in so entitled. And right. Just for me, I was like, I'm never going to be that person. Like, I just can't, you know.
I remember I was walking through the airport. I was in New York, and I saw an actor from Power. I won't say who it was. And I was walking, and I noticed him, and I did one of those things. I was like, is that the guy? Oh, that is the guy. And yeah. Then I looked away, and then I looked back, and he's staring at me like, please notice me. Please notice me. And he has this look on his face like, please say something. Please say something. And I was like, oh, poor guy.
Listen, though.
You didn't say anything?
I mean, it's human.
I didn't say anything at that point. I'm like, come on, man. Get out of here, man.
You would have made his day right there.
Nah, it's too much.
It's
too much.
It's such a weird thing, though. It seems needy and desperate. It does. And I'm human. So I caught myself in one of those moments because I was with a bunch of actors and everyone else was getting recognized and I wasn't. And I was like, oh my God, like, why am I not getting recognized?
yeah.
And then finally someone recognized me and I was like, oh, that's right. Yeah, let's take a picture, girl. Let's do this. And then afterwards I was like, whoa, like, why did you allow yourself to get into that? Like, it's not about that. Like,
yeah.
And so it was a good moment of like testing my heart. Cause it is weird when it's interesting. Like, we're all human. We all have egos. And so if you're used to people recognizing you, it does start to, you notice when it stops. Just like if, you know, your mom always calls you after a performance to tell you how good you are. And then she stops calling you. It's like, oh my God, why aren't you calling me? Like, am I bad now? Like it's like this mental game that you have to just make sure you're ahead of. But so that was a good moment for me to be like, oh my God, you're becoming like them. Stop. So, but yeah.
That says a lot about you that you recognize it, right? You know, you came out of your element and you noticed that and, you know, you adjust yourself.
Yeah. I mean, it might've happened before and I just didn't notice it before. Yeah. So, but either way, we all have to just be self-aware and we change the things we want to change. So nice. I was like, no, I don't want to be like that.
So you have a, a look that I feel can be like four or five different looks. I think you have that kind of face and aura. Have you ever been stereotyped for a role? Like, oh no, I can't see her playing that.
Well, actually, yeah. Well, the first role, Illicit, that I played in, it was, I'm come off like super wholesome and I'm pretty prude. So that's not like a bad assumption about me over the years. But so when I auditioned for the role of Farron on Illicit, she's a woman who seduces and I'm a married man and comes out of jail because of a bad relationship, all this stuff. Yeah, people did not expect me to book that role. Let me tell you something. I didn't even expect myself to book that role. I knew the director and I was like, let me just go in and have fun. Like, let me just show him I can do this role. Like, I didn't even expect myself to book it at all. But I was like, this girl is just hella, this girl is confident. Yeah, so what? She has baggage. I got baggage. Like, and so I went in with that and that actually helped me win the role because I wasn't so obvious. While some girls were playing into those nuances of her that made her just so obvious, if that makes sense. I don't know. Right. Do you get what I'm saying by that?
Yeah, no. Yeah, yeah.
It's more interesting to watch someone that when you first look at them, you wouldn't know their story. So for that, when I went on set, I'd worked with a lot of the people on that movie before and they greeted me with their doubt. Girl, when I found out you would book this movie, I'm like, she can't play this role. Are you crazy? You cast this girl? And I'm like, are you kidding me? Thank you for setting this up for me to just succeed in this role. Right. And, right. But I'm competitive. So I'm like, whenever someone tells me no, I'm like, I'm about to show up.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? No, no one tells me no. But yeah, so it actually helped me. It kind of pushed me to just go even deeper and just to let go and be free in it. And then, but they ended up complimenting me afterwards. Like, you actually kill this and I'm impressed. But yes, I do experience people stereotyping me for sure. But I think every actor, yeah, you get stereotyped a little bit.
So talking about roles, what were some of the toughest, most challenging roles that you faced to date?
Emancipation.
Emancipation was very hard though, actually.
Which you did a great job in, by the way.
Thank you.
Fantastic.
That was one of my first roles, like in a short. I think I'd done maybe a couple shorts before that, but I think honestly, every role of, I don't think I ever really necessarily, or if I do, it's a trap. If I go into a thing like, oh, this is going to be easy, I've done this before, it's a trap. And that's what the most difficult things are actually the scenes that I think I have. Because I get overconfident and then I'm on set like, oh my God, there's so much going on in this scene that I did not prepare for, like between the lines. That is usually what happens. Like that happened on Love Is, like the most emotional scenes I could come in freaking, because I knew like I was gearing up for like this hard scene. So I put so much effort into it. But the scenes, I think in television and in film, the most difficult scenes I think are the most simple ones. Because you overlook it, you underestimate the scene. And especially on in NBC, I made that mistake a few times for sure. The scenes that are more subtle are sometimes more difficult because you do it and then you feel like you didn't do anything.
Right.
But then that's how you're supposed to do it because it's just life. Like, yeah. So that's what I would say. I think every role that I got in the time that I got it was probably my most difficult role at that time because it was a step up from what I had done before. The time that I did Love It, like obviously that was the most difficult I've ever done. Even when I did Dolly, a Dolly Parton show, I did an episode on Heartstrings. That role was very difficult for me because I had just come off playing Nuri and I was in my head as an actor thinking, don't play Nuri. Like you can't play yourself at all because you don't want to be typecasted. So then there was this extra pressure instead of just being honest in the scene. The director would literally direct me out of my head into just being free into the scene. Right. And so even if it was only one episode or if it wasn't as much dialogue as Love Is, there was different difficulties in there that really challenged me.
An actor, comes up to you as new, they just getting started. What would be some of your advice, your initial advice? How do you get started as an actor?
Well, the easy thing, get into class. it's hard right now because it's COVID, but I would say audit every acting class you can in Los Angeles and find the fit for you. And honestly, for me, like I have weird advice, not weird, but I don't know, every person's different. But for me, I think it's very important for an actor to secure some kind of job of an income.
Right.
And that's what worked for me. And so I tell people, I'm like, I don't know what works for you, but I don't want to go into an audition worrying about rent. I want to have rent taken care of so that when I go in, I can be free and enjoy myself. Just find a side hustle that you can enjoy. And maybe it takes a couple side hustles before you can find one that you like. I love doing commercials. Some actors are like, I can't do commercials. Shoot, I love commercials. And to be honest, auditioning for commercials helped me so much with acting, because if you can go into an audition for 2 minutes, be grounded, be real, and walk out, then you can do anything. Like you have no time to prepare. They ask you on the fly. Like it actually helps you get confidence in the room, and they don't freaking compliment you. They don't care about you. They're like, okay, next. So if you can have confidence and peace in that environment, then it will only help you in the theatrical world, where they give you more time and there's more investment, if that makes sense. But also my advice would be to also still have a life. If you don't have experiences to pull from, there's an amazing acting coach who talks about that with her students. She's like, have a life, go on vacation. Like, don't be like, I can't book out because what if a job comes? Like, honestly, almost every time I've booked is because I was out of town. Like, I swear to you, like I would just, there was a time where every time I went on vacation, I get a call. They're booking you, or you're testing for this. Can you come back? I'm like, hell yeah. I got a mini vacation and I got a job. Like, I think there's something about not being desperate. People read your desperation in the room. It's so irritating. There's nothing worse than a desperate person. So if you have things to look forward to in your life besides acting, or just creative ways to express yourself, then when you go in the room, you can have fun. And take full advantage of the opportunity instead of making it this moment where you need this job. Otherwise, you're not going to thrive. Now, I will say some actors thrive off of that. They thrive off of high stakes. And so they do better that way. And I think that's also important. Know who you are. Know what kind of person you are. Know the environment you thrive in. Know your weaknesses. Know your strengths so that you can create an atmosphere where you can succeed. And then it's all about timing. Success is when preparation meets opportunity.
Yeah.
Control what you can control.
Wow. That's pretty, you dropped a lot of hidden gems there for anyone who's listening.
Well, they weren't hidden. They were pretty out there. They're just like.
Yeah.
So as an actor, what genre do you like working in typically?
See, that's the thing for me is I love so many different genres. I mean, I grew up dancing. I grew up singing. So I like a dream to be in a musical, like dream by far. But I also love drama and I love comedy. I don't have as much experience with comedy. I have training in it, but so I would love to do some comedies, romantic comedies, all types of stuff. And I also have a background in martial arts, actually. So,
what?
All three of us all had to do martial arts because my dad was stationed in South Korea when he was in the army and he got a black belt in Hapkido and Taekwondo. So I got to a brown belt and then I chose to do the Nutcracker instead of get a black belt. But I have a background in martial arts, so I would love to do more physical action work because I love it. I did stunts in college, worked with stunt for stage, which is a little bit different, but I love that kind of stuff. I love being outdoors and I'm a Colorado kid, so I'm not afraid of dirt or falling on my face.
What draws your interest to signing on to a project? What makes you say, oh yeah, this is the one?
That's such a good question, right? Because honestly, like Love Is, I had just come off of testing like another job that I loved. And it was between me and the girl who got it. Wasn't me. Obviously, within 24 hours, they asked me to test for Love Is after hearing no from this other project, which was a really, I mean, I guess I can tell you what the project is. It was Umbrella Academy. And the amazing actress from Broadway got the role because she's incredible. So I was like, okay, fine, I'll lose you.
Right.
But I love that role because it was so dark and artsy, and I love dark and artsy. And but so within 24 hours, I got the test for Love Is, and I liked Love Is, but it wasn't until I was really in the test where something clicked in me. And I got the character because I was in a similar situation with my career, in the sense of, if you look at the pilot, she's talking about trying to get an opportunity in writing and like doing the work. And so I was definitely in that place. So it just, like, in the test, I was like, oh my God, I have to get this role, which is terrifying when you get that, because you're like, oh my God, I hope I get it. But yeah, I don't know. I think a lot of times when I read the script, when I'm done reading it, it's something that is not necessarily about words or even emotion. It's like almost, it's like an attraction. Like, you're like, oh my God, I feel this girl. Like, I feel this woman. If I read the script and I have to sit for a moment, like, oh my God, what I just read, this is awesome. Then yeah. But I've read scripts that I didn't like the script so much, but I love the character. And I was like, shoot, I love this character. I don't care if I don't like the script. I want to play this character. But I've read scripts. I turned down a really great, just, this is just for an audition. It wasn't offered, but I was like, I'm not even going to audition for this. It's an incredible role. And I turned it down, not because I didn't feel like I connected with the character, because I did, but I felt like, it's very strange as an actor. There's a balance between being like, oh, I can play anything I set my mind to, and then also knowing that you can't play anything you set your mind to.
Right.
And knowing I released it because I was like, listen, you guys, is a great script, great character, but there's a woman out there that this is for, and it's not me. And it's a very strange thing. It's like, you just know. And for me in this particular situation, it was like, I need, for me as an audience member, I would be disappointed to see someone of my skin color and my hair texture to play this role. I want a woman who has a darker skin tone, different hair texture, to bring this to life. And
I'm very glad. I'm very glad you do that.
Yeah. And I think that's hard. Like, I think in the end, we feel like we can play anything, and to a certain degree we can, but at the same time, like, I'm just like, I'm an audience member. I would be very disappointed if I saw someone like me play this role. And that's enough for me to be like, nope. Because if I feel that way, I know that the majority of people are going to feel that way.
I met with an actress. What was her name? But I met with her, and she's maybe close to your complexion. And, you know, I met with her, and she just was, I wanted someone dark skin and who had like a natural hair look and like a fro, that sort of look. And it was in the script. And she came in, and the casting director brought her in, and she's like, I'm just going to say off bat, I'm not right for this, but I really love the script, and I just want to talk to you. Like, she just turned it down already. In the meeting, she turned it down because she's just like, I just want to meet you because I know I'm not right for this script. And when she did that, I appreciated it so much, because even when I saw her picture, I was like, I can't. She's not right for this, but okay, I'll meet her. You know, I've seen her on TV shows, yeah. So okay. But like, to actually have her say that, I appreciate it so much. So I appreciate you being like, you know what? Yeah. Someone else needs to be playing this.
Yeah. And I think that's a hard.
It's hard. But it, yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, it's necessary.
This is something I was always interested in, because I think I have a similar mindset to you when it comes to this. We met each other at a Bible study. And right. How does your spirituality play when you're selecting a project, or what clear boundaries do you set when it comes to that?
I think as an artist, it's a very interesting process, because I believe that the actor is a vessel. My experience of being an actor is like also being like a person who prays. You're a vessel for what God is saying, what the Holy Spirit is saying. And some people pray where they, and some actors play where they want all the control, and they want, no, this is how it should be. This is how I see it in my mind. This is how it be. But the people who are the really good actors and the people who are the good prayers are the people who are open enough to be the vessel of someone else's voice. Right. So for me personally, that's why I have to feel a sense of calling to it, calling to the character, a purpose for it. And the thing, to be honest, I don't necessarily tell my rep, no, this, none of this, none of this. I tell them I'm uncomfortable with this kind of stuff. I'm uncomfortable with this. But I also find that for the right story, I might wiggle my boundaries a little bit because of the purpose of the story, right? Like, right. So that's why I'm very much of an actor who reads scripts. I'm like, let me read this script. Let me see. And also, okay, what kind of director is this? I think about what kind of director is this? This is a very raw director. And I do have boundaries with sex scenes and nudity and things like that. And I also will be very, very upfront and say, look, I'm not going to be doing the nudity that you want for this role. It's not in my boundaries. And I know what kind of director you are. And so it might be better for you to find someone who doesn't have those boundaries so that they can be completely raw and be able to bring your story to life the way that you see it, your vision. And I think knowing that and being okay with that is important as an actor. I sat in an acting motivational group years ago, and it incited a lot of anger in me. And the reason why is because this guy is a casting director speaking to a lot of young actors, probably in their 20s, early 20s, straight off the boat, you want to say, or straight off the plane into LA. And he's telling them, I hate actors who say they have boundaries. Like, you're a freaking actor. You're not allowed to have boundaries. And I said, it made me very angry. I said, this is why actors are committing suicide, because right. They sell your soul. They sell their soul, their body, all of their boundaries, their mind, their emotions, everything to directors, because that's what they're told to do. That's what makes them a good actor. And then they have nothing left. And so they feel empty and they kill themselves or they drink themselves to death. These things. And so I think it's very important in every actor to know what their boundaries are and to readdress them yearly, because, you know, it could change over time, and not being afraid to be honest about them and find the balance within that. So I am very aware when I read scripts, okay, what is this story telling and what is my part in the story? Because I do believe media is one of the biggest influencers in the world. And I'm just in prayer about it. And one thing that I've learned, don't be religious when choosing your roles either, because part of the point of telling a story is to tell stories of flawed human beings.
Right. Right.
Nobody's perfect.
Right.
And I think that's a crutch that some people who are Christians, it's a fine line of finding the balance of not being so open that you just do something to please other people, but also not being so closed off that you actually miss out on opportunity of playing a real person.
Some of the roles that you've played, which ones have really impacted your life outside of acting?
See, that's the thing that's so fascinating. Does life imitate art, or does art imitate life? I do believe that God is intentional, that like everything in life is presented to us and we have an opportunity to choose it, to refuse it, to learn from it, to hide from it. The thing about my journey is I believe it's very intentional. I mean, I wasn't even necessarily planning to be an actor. I've been dreaming of being an actor since the moment I could dream. I always knew that it's like something in me knew I was going to be in Hollywood, and I denied it. I can't be in Hollywood. I need to be someone who's professional. Like, I applied to 8 schools in psychology and I still ended up in Los Angeles,
right?
Being an actor. Right. And, it's funny the things that you end up crossing paths with. So to answer your question, honestly, every role triggered something, and triggered is used in such a negative way because it's usually painful, but pain is good if we respond to it the right way as an opportunity to learn. And Every role has triggered something in me. And when I tell you, like, especially will elicit, you know, judgment and all being closed off, all this stuff. Love is, I mean, even the one-liners that I did would trigger something in me, like something that I was like, why are you so desperate? Why are you so hungry to get all the time? Like, just tons of different things, but Love is definitely triggered. I had to reface every relationship I was in, the healthy ones, the unhealthy ones. And at first that was not good because I didn't know how to readdress them. So it left me very open, very vulnerable. But it was actually good because I needed to readdress a lot of those things in order for me to be in a healthier relationship. And even counsel of dads, when I tell you, there were things that that character was going through that I was going through, like, it's almost freaky how you will get these roles and you'll be like, crap, I'm freaking dealing with this with so-and-so. Now I got to freaking deal with it in this scene. Like, it's, right, it's strained. And a lot of actors talk about it. Like, I know Taraji P. Henson has talked about it before. And she's like, it's very strange how you end up lining up with these parts that are kind of bringing up things that are going on in your life at the time.
By the end of your career, you're going to be like a therapist.
Yeah.
But if you look at a lot of actors, though, isn't it interesting when you listen to a lot of actors' interviews, you can tell the ones who are really allowing themselves to change for the roles and the people who just allow it to bury more.
Yeah.
Because we're in a game of imitating life. Have to understand the human psyche to be able, to a certain degree, not like a psychologist, but to a certain degree to be able to do the artistry. So it's interesting.
You know, guitarists have guitars, pianists have pianos, but actors, your instrument is you, and it's your mind and it's your body. And you have to play it properly.
That's why you have to have safe, healthy boundaries, because you will destroy your one instrument. Amen. And then what do you have?
Preach on.
Preacher.
Yeah.
So going through the two most recent projects, Love Is and Council of Dads, what was it like? You know, you got Love Is, and that was like the big thing. And then it goes off air, and then Council of Dads, another big thing, and then it goes off air. What was that roller coaster like?
Oh God, it was awful.
Right. I sort of thought of that about you. I was like, damn, Council of Dads too.
It's a part of the business. And I think it's fascinating though, because both shows, people would say in like the cast who've been working for 30 years, like, I've never experienced a show with so much magic, so much spirit. Like, I've never, all the shows I've done over the past 30 years of my career, like, this show's gonna last at least 5 years. This is what people are saying. Like, people who are on the crew, they're like, I've done this show, like, this show's gonna last, man. Like, this show. So I'm like, this is hilarious. But I mean, you know, Love Is would have lasted, but there was, you know,
drama,
legal stuff. But but even with Council of Dads, there was COVID happened, and there's so many things about the show that they're like shooting in Savannah with three under, like, kids, minors in no, we're not putting money into that. Like,
right,
there's so many external factors that have a show go and not go, but it's very interesting. I think you have to go through a level of just surrender and trust. And it just reminds you that you are not your job. You are not your career. And I do take it as a great opportunity, though. At first, it was just like, dang, this sucks. But then I did realize that, you know, I'm in a very interesting place in my career. I've worked with amazing people. I've been a number one on a call sheet. I have some fans, you know, some people recognize me.
Just for the people who don't know, what does number one on a call sheet mean?
Oh yeah. So number one, it's kind of like being the president on a set. So every movie has numbers listing the main character to the smallest amount of screen time. There's a lot of old age tradition in Hollywood. If you're number one on the call sheet, you're basically the boss. Everybody has to cater to you first. This is back in the day when there was huge movie stars. If you're the number, like, people fight for the numbers. So like, if you look in movies where there's like four main characters, they are fighting for that number one slot. That means your name shows up first in billing. Technically you could get paid more. Now it's different now, because I think we're in a time in history where we're trying to remove a lot of habits of elitism, and classism in a sense. And it's in a way it is kind of a classism on set. like to the point where I was on set and I didn't understand this, right? I was new. I'd been on some movies and some sets, but I didn't really understand the number one thing because I'd never been more than one line, or like I was number three on two movies, but it just was such an indie film. They didn't care about that stuff.
Right.
I would say something to a crew person. They would literally, excuse my French, but I do want to say for this point, he's like, you're fucking number one. You can do whatever the fuck you want. And I was like, dang, this guy holding a light said that to me. I was like, okay. Like it very much is a thing. Like they're going to cater to your needs more than anyone else. But so I had experienced that at the same time, you know, both shows didn't go more than season one. And they always say like, you really need to be on a show at least three seasons for it to really make an impact. And that's kind of the truth. Like to really get a following, it usually is, think about shows. Most shows ratings really pick up once they have a season two, because once they have a season two, people who weren't naturally drawn to it start to watch the first season. Cause they're like, oh, well, this show's got in season two. Everybody's loving it. Like, oh my God, let me watch this first season. So I haven't experienced that yet. But the good thing is I'm also in a place in my career when I'm not super branded in one direction. Because I haven't been on a show long enough for you to be like, oh, she can only play this role. I haven't been one character for five seasons, season here, episode here, a movie here, another season here. So the good thing is that I'm not as branded or typed as some actors who come off of a huge show that lasted three, six seasons, 10 seasons. So I'm still kind of in the industry considered an up and coming actor, which has its benefits in the sense of I'm kind of in a moldable place still where people are kind of open to see where I still fit, which right. is good.
Right. It's a good place to be.
Yeah. It has its benefits, has its discouragements, but it's all part of the process.
I'll say this, and I might've told you this already, but I feel like you're one of the, and I've worked with a bunch of different actors and a lot of actors in my previous projects have gone on like you have to do big things. And when I first met you, I said, oh, she has the it factor. It was like a casual thing I said to myself, like, oh, she has the it factor. That's the reason why I wanted to work with you on Emancipation, because I was just like, I don't know how famous she's going to be, but there's an energy you carry that's not just positive, but it's something that's like a, I don't feel like you see obstacles as a stopping thing. You just sort of go and do what you have to do, and you have a light about you. So that always made me say, oh, she has the it factor and she's going to be successful. Like you already seemed like a movie star before you were a movie star, even when you drove your hoopty to go.
You saw my hoopty back then?
I saw the hoopty. I edited the film, so I definitely saw the hoopty.
Oh, yeah. I forgot that we used my car in this scene. Oh, my gosh.
So yeah. Even when that, I said, oh, this girl's a star. She's going to be it. So I will say that about you, that I have no doubts that you're on your way. It's just a matter of, you know, people figuring it out. Story time. pew, 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 pew. Your most interesting on-set experience.
Most interesting or most embarrassing?
Ooh.
All right. Go there.
I've had a lot of interesting experiences on set, but I will tell this one story just because I think that, okay. I was on set for one line and it was for a Fox show. And some of the other actors were improvising because these people were actually comedic geniuses. So I decide to be bold and say, can I improv? One liner. Okay. He's like, okay, sure. Why don't you say this? Blah, blah, blah. He starts telling me lines to say, and I don't say them. I say whatever the heck I want.
Right.
And I just keep going. And he's like, I can tell at this point. Actually, I couldn't tell in the moment. I could tell after. Like, first of all, you asked to improv. You're sucking at it. And then he's giving you improv lines to do. And you're not saying them. You're saying your own version.
Why are you being difficult?
What's wrong with you? Like, right. You're a newbie. Like, calm down. And basically what ended up happening is I was supposed to be in two scenes, like one scene with lines and one without. And they had a girl who was an extra with no lines in the scene with me, right? Where she just stands there while I say my line. And then the next scene, we're supposed to be together and we give him a look. He cut me out of the look scene. He's like, F this girl, forget she's gonna try and act to add a line or something. I'm not dealing with her. So I basically waited in the the green room all day, and he wouldn't use, like, I figured out later on what happened, but they're like, we're just gonna hold on to you because he might want to bring you back. He never brought me back. It was really embarrassing afterwards, because I was like, I think I totally misstepped and did something wrong. And I wanted to be bold and I wanted to be free and all this stuff. It was really embarrassing. And once I realized what happened, and I was also late that morning, but I say that story to say, you know, it didn't destroy my career. Okay.
Right.
There you go.
A year and a half later, I booked Alina in a series. I've been in lead twice. Like, these moments happen, and it's like, you just have to humble yourself and be like, that was not the best decision, but that's okay. Like, you can still be bold next time. Just do it the right way. And it's just humbling, very humbling. Yeah. And it reminds me, though, something that I really have said for so many years, and I really believe in it. Not one job is going to make or break your career. Consistency. And so that's just one of those moments, like, and even like, think about it, one job can't just make your career either. Like, you can have the best job ever, but if you're not consistent, you'll just disappear. Right. And people do bad movies all the time, but because they're consistent, that one bad movie is not going to ruin their career. One bad audition is not going to ruin your career, and one great audition isn't going to make your career. It's consistency. So that's just another example of how it was a bad day on set. But it didn't break me.
That's powerful.
It didn't make me, but it didn't break me either.
Right, right. That's powerful.
That's fantastic. Should we get the drum set for the last question?
Okay. Let's do like a, I don't know, like a thing. I'm probably going to cut this out because audio, but let's do it anyway. 40 years from now, you're an old woman. Ooh. You're looking back in your career. What is making you most proud?
That I never gave up. And I told stories that I believed in.
Nice.
Yeah. My continual dream is to be completely honest, is to tell stories that helps people heal. And I believe I've actually had opportunities to do that with Love Is and Council of Dads. And I hope to continue to do that.
You know, as much as I we say this every time, no one has like a surface answer to that. No one's like, win an Oscar or make $1 billion. Everyone's always like saying something that's always like helping someone else. Or like you said, you want to help people heal. It's always interesting to me that no matter what it is, we always come back to the most important things in life.
That's impactful.
All right, Michelle. Thank you. I appreciate you. And,
Thank you, guys.
We'll be working together again at some point. I don't know when.
Yes. Or
what, but we will.
I'm sure.
Pleasure to meet you. Take care. Stay blessed.
You too. All right. Stay blessed, both of you guys.
If you enjoyed this episode and you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review. For more info about us, please follow us on Instagram @Once Upon a Film Industry. Thanks for listening, guys. See you next week.